The Transmitter.
My concept that I needed to do some major adjustments started to happen when I was 13, 14, and 15. I started to have some major insights. As I mentioned, I was in that world of stoners, right? And I was also in the world of psychedelics. And psychedelics led me to make some realizations about myself and about the person that I wanted to be.
That's Tempest talking about her early teenage years. By that point in her schooling, she'd found a group of kids she could sometimes hang out with. And with them, she would smoke pot and drop acid as often as she could, she told me. In school, she was muddling through her classes. One day, while on a mind-altering journey, she began to consider how other children interacted with their parents. In her mind's eye, she said, she saw a classmate with her mother, and she recalled how the mother coaxed the child forward to meet new people, saying, "Go introduce yourself." No one had done those things for Tempest, she realized. No one had prepared her for life's social interactions. Her father preferred to live on the edge of conventional society, that cabin way out in Alaska, camping alongside a lake, renting a houseboat. Her mother had not offered much either, and when she did try to teach Tempest things, these lessons seemed to come from left field, Tempest said. In this mind-altered moment, Tempest understood that she was partly to blame for her failing socially, she told me. Her psychedelic trip that day tore down some wall in her brain and let in new light.
And I walked out of that experience having a radically different view of myself, my skills, recognizing that I lacked skills, that I just was simply lacking skills and guidance. And so I started paying closer attention to skills. And all, like I was, my mind had finally kind of woken up in a particular way that I was completely blind to. I was gathering information, but I wasn't interpreting it very well. And now I had a new framework, and it was a reparenting framework. And so I then started seeking out mentors.
It's possible this was the first time in Tempest's life that she realized she wanted to better herself. In the coming years, she would find the mentors that would help change her trajectory, starting not long after she left home at 16. My name is Brady Huggett. This is When Autistic Kids Grow Up. Chapter 2, You Need to Go to College. After leaving home, Tempest stayed with a friend until she got a job hosting at Ruby Tuesday, working nights. She was no longer going to school. Word had gotten around, she said, that she wasn't living with her parents, and the school unenrolled her. And when she couldn't stay with her friend any longer, and after she decided that the downtown shelters were no option for a teenage girl, she came up with another plan.
So what I did instead was I carried around a big bag, big old bag. I had changes of clothes in it. I had makeup in it. And I proceeded to con my way into every bar in the city of Atlanta.
The bars of North Atlanta became a haven for Tempest. She'd enter pool halls in the afternoon when no one was checking IDs and spend hours at the tables, her safe harbor, until she became known as a regular.
I had figured out that with playing pool, I could get meals and I could get out of the storm. I could have social interactions. I could get status. I could get all kinds of things around it.
Now, and maybe for the first time ever, a few of Tempest's natural gifts rose to the surface. The first was her looks. Here is Fikriye Özmural, a figurative painter and professor of fine arts born in Turkey, who became friends with Tempest when they were in their 20s. She goes by Fik.
She's strikingly beautiful.
tall, slender, blue eyes. And have you, I don't know if you've seen her smile, but yeah, when she smiles, it's like the sun and the moon, just, you know, it's, she's gorgeous. But she never looked into the mirror, even in our friendship, she's never looked into the mirror and just going, oh my God, I'm so pretty. Like, I'm just, she never acknowledged her own beauty. That was something she was told by people, but I don't know that she saw it as well as other people saw it.
This helped Tempest get attention in the pool halls. When she needed to clean up, she used the bathrooms at McDonald's to wash her hair or wipe herself down. The bars of Atlanta were legally allowed to be open until 4 a.m. in those days, and Tempest stayed by the safety of the pool tables as long as she could. Sometimes she was offered a couch to sleep on, but other times she had to find her own way.
I would leave the bar, and there were some apartment buildings that weren't that far away, and they were the kind where you can open the door, and then inside you have all the different, like, apartments.
With the stairs.
With the stairs, yeah. Exactly like that. And I could sleep, I would go and sleep under the stairs, and I'd be out of the cold, and I'd sleep under the stairs, and I would just wake up whenever I heard anybody, like, moving around. And then I would just act like I dropped something, and then get my stuff and leave.
It was terrible being afraid all the time, she said, curled up beneath stairwells in the dark hours, sleeping with one eye open. She knew she couldn't let anyone get close enough to rescue her, she said, because then she would be exposed.
It's dangerous because you have nowhere to run to and you're going to be homeless tomorrow.
Yeah.
So you can't have anyone know. Can't have anyone know where you're sleeping. Can't have anyone know that you've got no one. No one can know. So I just made up lies. I mean, I had a full life of lies that I just told people. I had a full life con that I did.
The thing that helped turn her life around was the game of pool itself. There was an interesting thing about bar pool and women, she realized. The billiards rooms were male-dominated, she said, and considering her young age and her looks, the men paid her attention, and they sometimes bought her food. But once the players realized that she was serious about the sport, they cared more about you being a girl interested in the game than they are about you being a girl, she told me. These players found Tempest eager and pliant. I would listen to anybody, she said. I would do dirty shots if you coached me on it, and that made her a good table partner. Tempest had stumbled into a community. She ended up having all these people take me under their wing and teach me how to shoot, she said. And she got very good at pool.
I could display my intelligence through pool. I could display the way I thought through pool. I could have an argument through playing pool. It's like playing chess. There's a communication that's happening. And there are statements being made. And man, I was in heaven, and skill and finesse, and I got to move around, and I wasn't confined to a chair. Being confined to a chair through school was also physiologically devastating for me, but also psychologically. I needed more motion and movement, and I was able to get that when I was playing pool, and that was my life changer. If I had not had pool in my life, I feel like really bad things would have happened to me.
Being good at pool began to turn Tempest's self-esteem around. People admired her skills, and she realized she did not mind being the focus of attention, that she liked it when a small group gathered around the table, watching her line up a shot and bang it home. Later, when she'd present her autism research at conferences, she felt the same kind of charge. That was the second gift she discovered. But the third gift was maybe her most valuable. It was that when Tempest was fully engaged in a topic, it would consume her. And when it did, her work ethic knew no bounds. And it was her work ethic, eventually, that got her into higher education. For a while, Tempest moved in with a boyfriend and tried twice more to enroll in high school. She didn't last at either one. Instead, she tested for her general education diploma, her GED, in 1993. She joined a pool league, and her team won a paid trip to Las Vegas. And it was in Vegas that Tempest would meet a man, a pool player like herself, named Leonard. The two hit it off, and when the tournament was over, she kept in touch and then went to visit him in New York City. She stayed for about a year and a half with Leonard, but the relationship was fraught, and she felt her luck was on the edge of running out, she said. She went back to Atlanta and moved in with her father and told Leonard that she was done with New York.
And I told him I'm not going back up there. And I made the mistake, like, you can come down here and all these things. What I should have said is, we're done. But I didn't have that ability. And saying we're done and doing and really drawing those boundaries and doing those things is something that I, you know, struggle with.
Leonard did come down to Atlanta. And that, Tempest said, is where her son was conceived. She had the child, and she named him Avis. But eventually, her relationship with Leonard began to fail again.
I always felt like I wanted to know who he was, but that I couldn't quite find him to interact with. I like him. If he's been drinking, he turns into an interesting person.
Yeah.
And all the rest of the time, he is not there. And by not there, during my pregnancy, he was not there. When I was in the hospital and we lived together, he wasn't there.
They didn't live together all that long. Tempest moved out when Avis was around 2. And by then it was becoming apparent that Avis was developmentally delayed.
I knew there was something not going right. Well, wrong when he had colic. And the colic wouldn't stop. And he had colic for several months. And my ability to handle him was at its end. But he wasn't developing speech.
Yeah.
But he really wasn't talking. And so, you know, 6 months comes and goes. 9 months comes and goes. A year comes and goes. 18 months, and there's a little bit of head scratching, but nobody really cares. But right at 2 years, now he's not talking. He's got 5 unintelligible words. And Northside, I want to say it was Northside Hospital, was like, the pediatrics there was like, we're recommending speech-language pathology. He needs an assessment and all of that. And that started sending me on the road to getting him assessed. They recommended an assessment for autism. And he met criteria for autism.
Yeah. And right around this time, Leonard pulled himself out of Avis's life.
So we were co-parenting for a little bit, and then he met a lady, and after that he decided that unless he had full custody, then he didn't want to even bother with visitation. He had access to his son, but he chose not to exercise it. We're on our own, and things were rough. Things got really rough.
Tempest had worked all sorts of jobs since Avis was born. Bartender, waitress, data entry, file clerk for a lawyer. But through all this, she kept her dream of becoming a professional pool player. And she decided to fully chase that dream.
So I start training. I'm training and training and training and training. I won't join any tournaments. I won't do anything else. I train for a year. Training. I would train like 8 hours a day, work. You know, when my son was at school, I'm training and I'm working in the evenings. I'm doing all these different things. And I had a boyfriend during part of this time, yeah. So I was able to do it. And after training for a year, I joined an amateur tour and won my first stop.
She beat out seasoned players she'd known from Atlanta's bars. I got really good, she told me. Tempest did this for about a year, and she got invited to an open tourney in New York City. But then reality hit home. The entry fee was $1,500, she said, and she'd need a hotel room. She tried to find a sponsor, but that didn't work out, and so her dream evaporated. And Tempest's options were truly narrowing down. She was back to working in bars and pool halls, particularly in the Buford Highway area. It's a highly diverse section of Atlanta, buoyed by immigrant populations, mixing in with the white and the black communities. In a mainly Korean club, she met another man who shifted her life again.
And one of the guys there was visiting from California, and he's like, you need to go to college. And he's insistent about it. And I end up dating him for a little bit, and then he doesn't want to date me, and it's one of these things. But he insisted, you need to go to college, you need to go to college. So I started researching where in the world I could go to college, because clearly it's not Atlanta. Atlanta, you have to have money to go. Even with student loans, there's no way to survive, cover an apartment, take care of a child, all of that. I discovered there was 2 places I could go that made sense. One place would be to Alaska, which would pay for all of my college because of when and where I was born.
Mm-hmm.
And but that sounded terrible. The other place was California.
Tempest packed up Avis and her belongings and drove a Ryder truck more than 2,000 miles to Covina, California. Eventually, she got Avis into a school, and in the fall of 2001, she enrolled in Citrus College, a community college in Glendora, about 25 miles northeast of Metro Los Angeles. Tempest was 28, and she thought she knew what she wanted to do for a career. She'd been influenced by Avis, who was 6 years old by this time.
I was going to be a speech-language pathologist. That's what I started. Except I wanted to specialize in autism.
It was at Citrus that Tempest met Fik, the Turkish artist. After 2 years at the school, Tempest transferred to California State University, Long Beach. At Long Beach, Tempest was part of the McNair program, which focuses on underrepresented people, whether by race, geography, or some other demographic, who might want to go to graduate school. In her last semester at Long Beach, Tempest had a falling out with a professor. And the issue partially had to do with perceptions around autism.
I was taking a class on nonverbal communication. So I was always trying to put together courses that would inform my understanding of autism. And so I thought this nonverbal communication would be very interesting. But it was being taught by a dance professor. And she started to basically teach the class kind of nonsense. At one point, she was basically talking about how gays and left-handed people are basically products of injuries inside of the uterus, that they weren't natural, you know, humans, basically.
On one test, the students were asked to argue which gender might be better at nonverbal communication, men or women. Simply pick a side and argue it. But that made no sense, Tempest said, and she skipped that section of the test. The teacher gave her an F, and when Tempest went to talk to her about it, the two had a little bit of a scuffle, she told me. It escalated, and the teacher told her to leave the classroom. Tempest walked out and went straight to the dean's office to tell her side of the story. The teacher ended up filing a complaint, saying that during the confrontation she feared for her life, Tempest said. Here's Tempest telling me about that.
The woman at Long Beach, the professor, who said that she was fearing for her life, I was assuming that the two of you were shouting at each other?
We didn't, but I have been known to have a tone. And I know what my tone sounds like. It's where I get like this, and, you know, I'm talking like this, and I'm like, no. Actually, I don't understand. Can you help me understand? And I know I get this sort of like tone. But no, not shouting. When she told me to leave, I picked up my books. There might have been a point where I like I stood up and I might have had a book in my hand. I might have like put the book down as I grabbed all my stuff up like in a huff.
I asked her if the incident turned physical at all. Did she grab the teacher by the lapels, I asked. Did she put a hand on her shoulder? And Tempest told me, no. But she was upset. Here's Fik talking about Tempest's feelings about that incident at Long Beach.
She was like, I feel like this person does not like me, and that's why they're rejecting. Like, how I'm doing things is not the proper academic way channels of doing something. It became really personal for her. Because that activist in her, she feels the injustice of these people that are in these positions sort of ignoring what your underling is saying and kind of abusing the power. And that just turns a switch in her and says like, all right, you want a battle? I'm ready.
In the end, the scuffle settled down, and Tempest graduated from California Long Beach with a Bachelor of Arts in Psychology. Her thesis for the McNair program was titled Speech-Language Pathologist Preparation, Comparison of Autism Instruction Within Communication Disorders Programs Throughout the United States. Tempest conducted an analysis of the American Speech Language Hearing Association's publication of the U.S. Programs in Communication Sciences and Disorders. Her results showed that only 26% of the programs offered any instruction on autism. And she noted that if this demographic of individuals among the autism spectrum disorders are denied access to adequate treatment, all of society suffers. It was exhilarating work for her, but her goal was to keep learning about autism, to become one of those experts who are shaping policy, running studies, and growing the field's knowledge. She wanted a doctorate. Here's Feek again.
And I think she looked into who was making the decisions in this area in autism, and all of these people are either PhDs or they have extensive clinical research on this. And she said, to be able to say anything on that table, I need to do all of these things so I can get there. To be able to insert my unique point of view as a mother who has a child with autism, who has a child that you said was that you were considering to be low functioning.
She would have her chance. Tempest was accepted into the PhD program at the University of Wisconsin-Madison to work with a psychology professor, Morten Ann Gernsbacher, whose area of research included communication. In the fall of 2007, Tempest began her PhD program at the University of Wisconsin under Gernsbacher. The two had been in contact via phone and emails, something Tempest likened to a mail-order courtship. What are your interests? These are mine. Gernsbacher had been collaborating with researchers at the University of Montreal, publishing in August 2007 a paper titled The Level and Nature of Autistic Intelligence, which suggested that the overall intelligence of autistic children was generally being underestimated. This was exactly the kind of work that interested Tempest. And to help solidify their commonalities, Gernsbacher also had an autistic son. Gernsbacher nominated Tempest for an Advanced Opportunity Fellowship, money dedicated for students from economically disadvantaged backgrounds and or for certain racial or ethnic groups. But their relationship lasted only a few months. By the end of 2007, when Tempest and Gernsbacher met to discuss who might be on Tempest's evaluation committee for her first year project, Tempest told her mentor that she was looking around for someone else to guide her. The problem between Tempest and Gernsbacher was mostly philosophical, Tempest said.
She wanted me to design an intelligence test for young ones, and we're talking like two-year-olds on the spectrum, nonverbal, you know, intelligence tests. And I came back and said, I can't do it. It's an impossible task. It cannot be done. And it cannot be done if you understand it on a theoretical level. The only way we know that the IQ tests are valid is if they correspond to things.
Yeah.
Right? So academic achievement. All these different things. I have no way to design an IQ test and show that it corresponds to anything in autism.
Also, the work would basically be Tempest contributing to Gernsbacher's project. And Tempest began to feel resentful, she said, about working on something she did not design. There were also communication issues. Tempest had some maturing to do, she admitted. And sometimes in exasperation, she said things or asked questions publicly that weren't particularly wise. Gernsbacher did not want to be recorded or quoted for the story, but she did corroborate details of their time together. In the end, Tempest and Gernsbacher had a divorce after the first semester, Tempest said. In the wake of that decision, Tempest bonded with a professor, Colleen Moore. Moore was in the Department of Psychology at Wisconsin and was the on and off chair of grad studies. Today, she's an affiliate professor in the Department of Psychology at Montana State University. She is also, as self-described, one of the most straightforward people on the planet. Because of this, she thinks, she became a kind of shepherd for lost souls while at Wisconsin. Grad students who might be struggling with their advisor sometimes heard through the grapevine that Dr. Moore offered good advice. When Tempest came to Colleen Moore's doorstep, Colleen could see the ways that Tempest didn't quite mesh with Morten and Gernsbacher. Here's Colleen talking about Tempest.
I think her goal always was, at least my take on it is, to study disparities in autism treatment accommodations all across the board, you know. And that's what she was doing in her senior project in college, too, studying, well, why isn't autism included in special ed courses about language?
You know.
So that's what she wanted to do, and it really was not a fit with Professor Gernsbacher's lab at at all, you know, because she's like a psycholinguist, and psycholinguists study tweaky aspects of language, you know. And although Gernsbacher has strong interests in autism of her own, it didn't work for TA to be in her lab, you know.
Colleen Moore, who did not know all that much about autism herself, encouraged Tempest to write a special community degree proposal, which would allow her to design her own PhD program. This is fairly rare, Moore told me. In 2016, Tempest completed her PhD thesis, Identity as a Mediator Between Stigma and Stereotype Threat on Post-Secondary Outcomes for Adults on the Autism Spectrum. The paper required emailing some 9,000 agencies, organizations, providers, government offices, colleges, and universities to turn up 1,438 respondents aged 18 or older. A portion of respondents took Tempest's Autism Spectrum Identity Scale, or ACES, as she called it. The 22-question survey was designed to better understand how autistic adults view stigma, their future, and quality of life set against gender, education status, employment status, and diagnosis of autism versus Asperger's. Back then, Asperger's still had its own diagnostic criteria under the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders. Tempest had spent 8 years at Wisconsin. Avis was 20 by then. In the dedication section of her thesis, she wrote, "To my son, Avis, you brought me the Promethean fire in which I forged all of my accomplishments. Thank you for walking this long, winding road with me. We stepped on each other's toes all along the way, and this taught us both to be more careful. And when you taught me to believe in you, you taught me to believe in me. Simply put, I wouldn't have made it here without you. I love you." Now, all Tempest needed was a home to continue her research. That's next time, in Chapter 3. When Autistic Kids Grow Up was written and produced by me, Brady Huggett. Editing by Ivan Aransky and Paige Miranda. Art commissioned by Rebecca Horn. Music and audio engineering by Sam Schumann. Rest in peace to Leonard, Avis's father, who passed away in 2024. Go to the podcast page of thetransmitter.org to see photographs for this chapter and for a PDF transcript. Thank you.